by John for Jack Elka.
Oh, what a goal! What a goal!
Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton, and welcome to another podcast where we will be starting off as usual with the extra time segment where Owen Parks and I will be here to look back on a much improved Everton display as we earned our first win in five against Sheffield United at Bramall Lane. And then I'll be joined by Teddy McAllister and Ben Crawford later on to look ahead to the final day game against Bournemouth at Goodison in the final match preview segment of the season. Teddy and Ben will also be joining me for the middle bit in between, where we are most certainly going off topic this week, so definitely stay tuned for that. And of course, the end of the show as well, where the lads will be up against each other in a classic matchday squad quiz. As you know, the segments are always separate on YouTube, so I'll introduce them and whatnot. We'll get straight into the action and look back on our long-awaited return to winning ways in the extra time segment.
Everton actually serve up a surprisingly pleasant afternoon's worth of football. And to go back over it, I'm joined by Owen Parks. We picked up our first win in five games yesterday. Owen, I bet you weren't expecting that, were you?
No, not at all. With the formation that we changed to, which is 4-2-3-1, and just everything else that you'd expect from Everton away from home in the last 5 to 10 years, you could just see a 1-0 Sheffield United, Chris Basham header, and you just thought, yeah, let's just get out of here and finish the season.
I was envisaging us going down 1-0 and they just parked the bus, which was a classic under the spineless 4-2-3-1 managers of past, with like Marco Silva and Roberto Martinez.
Yeah, but they would have been very smart to do that if they got an early goal, but he didn't, and we really dug out the win there, and it was really refreshing to see us play them at their own game, which is battling quality, discipline, hard work, know how to keep the ball very well as well, because that's something else we haven't really been able to do, take the sting out of a game. And it's a testament to Everton that 3 or 4 times yesterday we just took a 5-minute spell just to keep the ball, not worry Sheffield United very much, and well, not worry them in the sense that we were peppering their goal, but we worried them in the sense that
they couldn't get the ball back.
They never really got a foothold in the game. Out of possession, we were solid. We stuck in a good shape, and it was a really positive display.
Yeah, it's really pleasing to see that we've found a bit of a battling quality a little bit too late, obviously. But I was really surprised to see us, like you say, knock the ball around so well in the second half. It's certainly that I said in my match reaction yesterday that it was our best away performance of the season. Now, would you agree with that?
No, not really, because I think there's been more times away from home where we've been more free-flowing. Newcastle away, I think, was probably our best. It was hard work that day, but I think they've only been beaten a couple of times at home this season, and we went there and we created loads of chances, and we still did what we did yesterday, by the way, which was dig in. There's been other ones as well where we've won, and I think Carlo Ancelotti now has 4 away wins as Everton manager in half a season, which is pretty good for an Everton manager, because we never seem to have more than 4 away wins in a season. We've got 5. So it's incremental progress, isn't it? Becoming more positive. It's just making you feel like you're going in the right direction. I think we are. I just think it's slower than people want, because Everton fans want everything now and they want to win everything. But I feel like we're becoming a team that's hard to beat, trying to keep the ball better and a bit of a threat in the final third.
Yeah, I think the midfield will be an absolute game changer. It's clear to see that the midfielders we've currently got, you know, there are players that Marco Silva signed or players who previous managers who've used this formation have blooded. And these players aren't really fit for purpose in a 4-4-2. And I think that's probably why Ancelotti's gone back to a 4-2-3-1 or a 3-man midfield at least. Just to sort of get the most out of a midfield that was flagging clearly in the last couple of games. And that's, for me, the best thing about Carlo Ancelotti is he's great in pretty much everywhere, let's be honest. But my favourite thing about Carlo Ancelotti is his pragmatism, which is something that I think you very rarely see in a top manager, is the ability to change between multiple systems. And obviously, I think 4-4-2 is the system he wants to go with. But if the going gets tougher, maybe teams, I said this in my reaction yesterday, that teams often suss out our setup. And I think when that happens, you need a plan B. And it seems like Carlo's always got a plan B and C, which is a really refreshing thing to see after the likes of Silva and Martinez in the past, who are very stuck in the ways and sort of labour to poor results without changing things up.
Yeah, I was referring before to the idea that he is flexible enough. It was a BT Sports interview where they said, I really want a team that hasn't necessarily got a clear identity, but a clear idea every time they step off onto the pitch, which I find really refreshing because you can always change things up and nothing ever becomes stale then, does it? I feel like if you have different formations, we've seen a 3 at the back, we've seen 4-4-2, now we've seen, it was more of a 4-3-3, to be honest, than a 4-2-3-1, because it didn't feel the same as a 4-2-3-1 anyway. But
it wasn't as dull as a 4-2-3-1 like we saw under Silva, put it that way.
No, well, it was just bad, wasn't it? But anyway, I feel like if we buy more mobile midfielders, we'll give ourselves more options than even what we've seen so far. I think it's just all about the Premier League, trying to outdo your opponent. And if you can do that by having different systems under your sleeve, then so be it. Because I feel like for too long we've been too predictable, and I just don't think we're predictable anymore.
That was exactly what I said in my reaction yesterday. I thought our biggest problem is that we can get sussed out very easily, and it's always good to have these different systems, like you say, up our sleeve, because it keeps the opposition second guessing. And when you've got the opposition second guessing, it puts them off their own game as well a little bit. And obviously that gives us a fighting chance as well. And I think if we get the better players and who are able to play a 4-4-2 along with a couple of these who maybe suit three-man midfield, there's a lot of opportunities for us to switch up mid-game and, again, maybe throw the opposition off the game and build our own way into games, which is not something we've done enough at all this season, but I'm sure Carlo's going to be looking to address that in the transfer market.
I feel like as we go along with Ancelotti, we'll see a team that's more with a winner's mentality than what we've seen before, where our teams just generally, when any type of pressure gets put on them, they wilt. I feel like this time, at least we'll bite. We've got someone who will. He says he's going to share recruitment with Brands, which is fair enough because Brands sort of runs the off the pitch spawn responsibilities. But I feel with Ancelotti, whoever comes in, they'll be buying into his system and they won't be buying into Silva's system or any other system that we had previously, which is either too aloof, which doesn't really feel like you've got any type of team spirit, or sort of too nice, where you get rolled over by a team who wants to really roll up the sleeves. And I feel like we've got someone who knows what they're doing now. Normally when you've had some of the performances we've had, there's been normally a big call for the manager, but there hasn't been that because people realise that he's working with what he's been given. And it really can't be sort of overstated, the job Carlo Ancelotti's done at Everton so far, considering we had, when Silva went and Dunk came in, we had 13, 14 points.
We were 18 when Duncan Ferguson started.
Yeah, like there we go. We were 14 points, something like that. We were in the relegation zone. We've been beaten 10 times in 15 games. It just all pointed towards the relegation battle. And I put on Twitter last night that we were gone. We were going. Because if you saw that run we had over Christmas, imagine if we kept Silva for that Christmas. If we go through each and every one of them games, you could make a case for us losing it. So Chelsea are home. you probably would have fancied Chelsea to beat us, even don't got them fired up. But I really couldn't see Silva winning that game. No,
Silva would not have won that game. United probably lost to United.
Arsenal or Rome, I don't think we'd have won that.
If they'd have appointed Arteta and we start Silva, oh.
They would have been firing for it, wouldn't they? Burnley on Boxing Day, we wouldn't have won that under Silva because he couldn't break teams down.
That'd have been a 0-0 if ever there was one.
There we go. So Newcastle away, we wouldn't have won that either. And then City on New Year's Day, we got beat 8-0. So we wouldn't have probably won a single one of them games. So if people say, oh, why are you saying we were in a relegation battle? No, we probably weren't at that point, but we would have been. We'd have probably been cut adrift a bit. So that's why I'm saying we were in a relegation battle. And for Ancelotti, with the help of Ferguson, to come in and clear us away from that, I think it's been an incredible job.
Yeah, there's been disappointing moments and the team's still very laborious to watch, but the job Ancelotti's done in sort of just putting a bit more steel into this side we have started to see it a little bit more. We have had our blips, the Wolves game last week, the Chelsea game before lockdown, the Derby as well against their blooming kids. Like those three games.
He definitely wouldn't have won that, would he?
So, but yeah, those are probably the three low points of his reign so far. But other than that, he's generally instilled a steeliness in this team that we definitely wouldn't have seen under Marco Silva.
No, not at all, because it's sort of like if you've won as many trophies as Ancelotti has, you've got to have a bit of a gritty and a steeliness to you, whereas the previous manager we've had just don't have that. You could say in sort of lesser way, people won't like this, but Allardyce might have had, yeah, because he was in so many battles at the bottom and with Bolton, his teams had to fight. And Moyes maybe as well, their teams had to fight, but apart from that, the rest of them are just...
The continental managers we've had in the past have been very spineless, haven't they?
Yeah, it's been a case of unless they can play a free-flowing brand of football, it's all folded very quickly. And with Ancelotti, that's certainly not going to happen because there's been no evidence of his teams ever doing that. And like the other two have said, people won't like that, but Allardyce teams and Moyes teams always fight, so whatever.
Well, to be fair, I think Carlo's good at instead a situation where we can both play and fight. Which is something we won't have seen, which is very encouraging to look forward to something like that. But obviously it's going to take time and some better players coming in the door to be able to get that out of this team.
Yeah, I think his remit so far has just been to try and get a flow of results going. So to play 4-4-2 and make it as difficult as you can and win as many games. Obviously with a window and some better players. And some time in pre-season. I know we won't have much time because it's a quick turnover, but with more time without games, I think you'll probably find Evan next season are a bit more better to watch as well. So we'll see.
You've got to hope anyway. I think that's the one thing that I said, that watching the second half yesterday gave us a bit more hope for next season, because I think everyone was fearing the worst after the last couple of games, weren't they, with the people were saying we could be in serious trouble next season. I was one of them, to be quite honest.
I'm still not resting on my laurels to say that everything's going to be fine. We're still a team that's really poorly it's been really poorly assembled, that doesn't really have any kind of clear way of playing. There's still so many things wrong with recruitment to Everton, so I'm not going to rest on my laurels, but I am more confident that we're going to be at least in a comfortable position with Ancelotti.
Yeah, we'll be comfortable, but is that what Everton were looking for when they appointed the proven winner?
No, I'm not saying that's the be-all and end-all, but I feel like if Marco Silva was still in this situation, and Martinez and Koeman, I'd be worried next season that we were going to stay in the league. So just because of the fact that Ancelotti's there, I don't think he can make this team a serial winning team. I think there's about five players that could possibly do so, but he's going to need help. Because it weren't long ago we were saying that this team couldn't string a result together.
Well, so, that was literally 3 days ago.
Exactly. There we go. So I feel he needs help in the summer to push us on, is what I'm saying.
But I think the reason we got that win was yesterday was because he changed the formation, and that's what brought that result. So if he stuck with a 4-4-2 there, we probably don't win. And that's his flexibility that brought that win, and that's what sets him levels above any managers we've had in the past. There's probably only David Moyes who would have done that, and he certainly wouldn't have done it mid-game.
No, I don't think anyone would have either. But I think it's also important to say that they were well off it of what their usual standards were. Sheffield United, normally they're a lot more fired up than that, but Toby.
What was that all about? I think it's maybe just it's a small squad. I think they've just tired out now. Obviously, they struggled against Leicester in the game before as well. Maybe it's just a bit too far.
Yeah, I think it's just the reality of the Premier League for a team with League One players.
That's a good point. There are players who have come up from League One, and there's players who, dare to say, who've come up from League One and had most certainly have in our team.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have a few of them. Few of their players as well. I know we've got Luca Dean, he's excellent, but I thought Ender Stevens for them
I'm a very big fan of Ender Stevens. I think he'd be a good addition, especially if Clayton Baines goes. But you know,
yeah. Well, I think maybe if Leicester do the right thing and cash in on Chilwell, I think Ender Stevens would be a good addition for them because I think he's a good player. I think they've got a lot of good players, but I think it's in a system where they know who's going to make the run where. I think if you put them in a different system, certainly with a different manager, I don't think any of them players have the same success.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I can see Ender Stevens, possibly if Chilwell doesn't move, possibly he'd fit in the Chelsea system, who do seem to use a three at the back sometimes. And
yeah, he's a good player.
He's a very good player. I like watching him. But for Sheffield United, I think it's interesting to be talking about players coming up from League One and doing bits in the Premier League. But we've got a few players of our own who've done it. Calvert-Lewin, Holgate, and of course, Jarrett Branthwaite, who came from League Two. And putting in some good performances, hasn't he?
He doesn't look like a lad who's 18, who was a bit part player for a League Two team, does he? He looked really comfortable on the ball. He knows how to defend. I don't know what it is, but he really surprised me the way he stepped in. And I think he's looked better than Yerry Mina, to be honest.
He's only played twice, but I think that says a lot about how sometimes we can't always put our trust in our centre-backs at the moment, but he has come in and done a very solid job, hasn't he? And the fact that he's a left-footed centre-back as well is very pleasing because we don't have one of those at the moment. We have been linked with Gabriel, but should we not manage to get Gabriel, it might not be as much of a hammer blow as it otherwise would have been because we've got a player there who looks like he's ready to step up.
I even said before Branthwaite stepped into the team that I weren't really sure on buying a centre back this summer because of the deficiencies elsewhere.
Yeah,
so Mason Holgate's a fantastic defender. He's been proven all the time. I really like Michael Keane. I think he's a good defender, and I think yesterday again he was fantastic. Mina, I think he's all right. I think he's reliable. And there's three, and I was saying, with these young lads who we've got, I'd rather develop them and give them a chance than just buy Thiago Silva, who's 109 and on £1 million a week.
Yeah, well, I wasn't really referring to Thiago Silva. I don't think that's ever going to be an option, to be honest, given the situation financially. But Gabriel was the name that's been heavily linked with us, and he's a left centre-back. And he has been doing well, and he's meant to be quite promising. And is a player that I've been really pushing for us to try and sign him. But if we don't manage to get him, I think Branthwaite is certainly a real boost for us now to be able to step in as a left-footed centre-back. And it might save us a lot of money in the long run.
I think we've got to be careful with him because I feel like it'll be all too easy just to wear him down because we do it all the time with young players. He's got to be managed properly in sort of the Anthony Gordon way rather than
the Calvert-Lewin Tom Davis.
or the Callum Connolly, I was going to say, who came in, looked like he was an half decent player, a right back, and then we never saw him again. And Brendan Galloway, who's fourth division of Luton or wherever. So I feel like there's got to be a proper plan for Brantford rather than us just sort of throw him in and hope for the best.
With that in mind, would you still push for Gabriel this summer, or are you adamant that we need to save all our funds for midfield?
I wouldn't have pushed for him even before Brantford, to be honest, because I feel like we've got centre-halves who can do a job. I mean, it's inconsistent, but they can do a job. I still look at that midfield and on like off the left and on the right, and I feel like we need someone. Sidibe, I don't think we're going to take the option on him. So if we're going to need a right-back. And if we're not going to sign a winger, we're going to need another striker and push Richarlison out there. So I feel like there's still a lot more to do in other areas of the pitch. Whereas I feel like centre-back, especially with Brantford and Lewis Gibson coming back, by the way, I feel like we can cope. Yeah,
we have got a lot, to be honest, of options at the back now.
I just don't think it's the number one priority. And another thing, if Stecklenburg's going on, we're going to need a goalkeeper.
And the question is, do we need a new number two or a new number one?
Well, a new number one, but will we get a new number one?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, but again, it all depends on how much money we can throw around in the summer. I don't really want to see us throwing too much money around because our record seems to be a lot better when it comes to buying cheaper players than it does when we throw our weight around in the market.
No, I just think we need to buy players who, I think the pivotal thing that we need to look at is if we're going to go with a 4-4-2, we're going to need to look at players who have had some sort of experience of playing in some sort of similar way with a two up front. I think we've got a lot of midfielders who I don't think have ever played in a 4-4-2 before.
No, that's spot on.
Davis might have done with Unsworth and that, but nothing in the first team. Sigurdsson of Swansea was 4-3-3. Awobi at Arsenal, he would have been a 4-3-3. Bernard, 4-3-3.
Awobi's definitely not going to fit a 4-4-2.
No, he isn't. Because he's a number 10, and that's why I was a bit annoyed last night that we played Sigurdsson in the number 10 where we had Awobi to see what he could do. But
that could be a possibility for Bournemouth on the final day if he wants to rotate a bit.
There's just under a week until the next game. I feel like there could be a couple of people who come in, but I feel like he'll stick with a similar team to what he played last night.
Yeah, I mean, when it's starting to deliver results, that's like got to be the option because it's not like we've been delivering many results. So, and I'm sure the last thing that Everton wants after the season, that regardless of how well we did yesterday, has been a pretty miserable one. The last thing we want to do is finish it on the low note of getting beat at home to a side who may still well go down even if they beat us.
Oh no, they're going down, all right. I'm not accepting anything else. We better beat them.
Yeah, that would be an absolute embarrassment. I think that'd be almost as bad as the Norwich game in November to get beat off them. But we've got to surely do well in that game. But we'll wait and see. They could well be relegated before we go into that game, depending on how Watford and Man City get on this evening. So we'll have to keep an eye on Watford. Yeah, I didn't think it'd be cheating Watford on this season, but so be it.
Yeah. I just anything but Bournemouth to stay up. So that's the only vested interest I've got left for the rest of the season is to sort of relegate them.
We talk about Everton's disappointing sliding doors moments of years gone by and the opportunities we've missed. But one of the positive sliding doors moments is when we hire Carlo Ancelotti, and the alternative could well have been to hire Eddie Howe.
That would have been very scary, wouldn't it? The people know my thoughts on Eddie Howe.
Well, I'm very much in the same camp as you when it comes to Eddie Howe. I'm not very... I think he's one of the most overhyped managers of recent years.
I think of all time, to be honest. I don't think anyone who... They've got... Well, let's just keep it simple. They've got worse every year. So that just tells me the more he's coached them in the Premier League, the worse they've got. The recruitment's been shocking.
Well, I think that's it. I think he's not a bad coach because he obviously got them out of League Two and up to the Prem, but his recruitment's appalling. There's one thing to be a good coach and there's another thing to be a good manager.
But he's ruined it for himself again because he had a core of players who were EFL players, but he kept them up for the first few years and then he ripped that up and just bought £30 million worth of rubbish and Solanke.
Solanke, Ard, a Phobie.
Brad Smith was there at some point, weren't he?
I think he's still there. Just
no, he's a charter.
Probably getting loaned out, probably, yeah.
The whole thing, and the ironic thing with them is their best players are players they brought through, like Ramsdale, the keeper's all right. A few players like that. Cheap deals like David Brooks. They're their best players and they still spend big on nonsense.
Yeah, well, I think they've probably bought some more insane ones this season. They'd even like that Stanislas they've brought him back into the fold after a few years in the cold and he's done well better than anyone else they've had.
That's because he's got the hunger to play for Bournemouth, the rest don't. And then as for his defensive organisation, Jesus.
No, that doesn't even bear thinking about. Imagine him in charge of Everton.
Imagine him with that midfield and a high line.
Oh, my God. That is like... When we talk about sliding doors moments, but the day we hired Ancelotti as opposed to somebody like that could well be a pivotal moment in making sure this bad era of our history doesn't get even worse.
I know we're going off at a bit of a tangent here, but people genuinely fumed before Ancelotti came on the scene that I said I'd rather have had Moyes than Howe. And people couldn't understand that for the life of them, but there was no contest there for me.
But, hey-o, we ended up with Ancelotti and it's gone relatively well when you consider how poor it's been most of the season. He's got us out of a hole. He's got us a couple of decent results in spite of a poor squad and you know it's disappointing. It's going to be a bottom half finish, but it's probably about where we deserve when you balance this up with what was saved up before he came in.
A distant bottom half finish, by the way, for Arsenal on 10th on 53. So we haven't really been close, have we?
Well, it's mad really because we were in the top half about 3 games ago, but that's what happens when you have a bad run of form in this league, and especially when it's been as tight as it has this year. And you know that just shows our shortcomings. We've got to drastically improve for next season. We've got to get the recruitment spot on, and we could be in with a chance for a decent season next year. But you know, there's a lot of what ifs, and we've just got to see what happens. And the recruitment's got to be better, and I'm confident it will be with Ancelotti and Brands working together and hopefully we can source the right players. I think if we get players who can work in a 4-4-2, like I say, and mix it up with players who can play in a 3-man midfield, I think that flexibility will only benefit us next season when it comes to, you know, if the going starts to get tough, maybe we can change it up and hopefully not go on as many bad runs as we've been on this season.
I think the key is mobility. Players with energy, you can plug any quality gap that they may have, but they can replace it with energy and fight and to get a result. I look at the lads at Toulouse, Ibrahim Sangare. Everyone are worried about him, apparently, because he has no technical ability. Well, if you look at some teams in the top half, they don't have much technical ability, but they're there because of organisation and discipline and energy. So maybe they're looking at the wrong type of player.
Yeah, well, we had a lot of technical ability in the midfield yesterday and he played really well in that three, but we've seen those very technical players try and play in a 4-4-2 and it just doesn't cut the mustard.
No, because you need to be able to get about the pitch. And they're all right in three-man midfield, but if we play 4-4-2 with them, they get overrun.
Yeah, so I think, again, we're going off on a tangent, but even after a good win yesterday, I think all eyes are firmly on the transfer market now as well.
I'm really pleased with yesterday's results. I know I'm.
We're not knocking that. And of course, it's a rare one for you. Andre Gomes played brilliantly. So,
I went as far as to say it's probably his best game for Everton. I feel like he really controlled the midfield.
There's it here first, guys. Owen's praising Andre Gomez.
Sigurdsson played well as well, but we won't mention that because it's Gylfi Sigurdsson, apparently. So.
Gylfi Sigurdsson plays well with a captain's arm and on as well. there's something that I never thought I'd say.
He's a changed man.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. We're going to. I was cynically saying that obviously Sheffield United's been linked with him, haven't they? So maybe he's like sort of turning it on to try and get a move there, which would be good because it might get us an extra 5 million for that performance yesterday.
They might be thinking, why did they want to sell him?
Interesting though, but they might put their hands in the pocket and actually pay us real money for him now.
Yeah, there we go.
So, you know, loads of positives to come out of that game at this rate, and yeah, hopefully just a little bit more optimism.
Just the last thing I'm going to say about this game, because no one's mentioned him, but I thought Jibril Sidibe played really well.
I thought Jibril Sidibe had a really good game.
Thought he played well. Best defensively.
Yeah, he was good defensively, and most of all, though, in possession, he got us moving forwards, but I don't think Seamus Coleman does that enough. I think
no,
he passes backwards too much, and I thought that sort of gave us a bit of a breath of fresh air moving forward. He picked Walcott out regularly or moved it into Sigurdsson or Gomez a lot quicker. And that really got us moving forward.
He plays a lot of progressive passes. And I think that gets us up quicker.
Yeah, and sometimes it doesn't come off. He is a risk taker in comparison to Coleman. But sometimes you need that. Especially when you want your fullbacks to attack. We do need a bit more adventure. And Luca Dean clearly has that on the opposite side. But we need a bit of balance now and need a right back who can do that. Whether that's Sidibe, I don't think it is. I think it will be a new right back coming in for next season. But that's definitely got to be the mantra now. We've got to try and get a right back who can be as adventurous on the right as Dean is on the left.
Yeah, and can defend consistently as well. I think that's another important thing because Sidibe does go missing defensively at times. Yeah. But
I mean, I think
his long been successful. I think he's done well.
He's done all right. I mean, he's got his fair share of assists, in all honesty. But able to gloss over that Norwich game at Goodison in November.
Yeah, I still don't know why he got subbed off for Coleman.
That's the Marco Silva here for you. I'm not completely convinced on Luca Dean as a defensive fullback either. I just think he's an excellent attacking threat for us. He really does give us a threat down that left, and he seems like he's had some of his best performances recently.
Yeah, well, he's been excellent since the break. I think him and Michael Keane have been our best players since the restart, for just consistency and putting games down.
Yes, certainly. Michael Keane's been a revelation since the restart. I'm not saying he's going to be the best centre-back there's ever been, but
he's seemingly got to grips with it, hasn't he?
But he's shown a solidity we haven't seen from him in his time here so far, which can only bode well moving forward, whether we sell him we can certainly make some money for him if we did sell him, or whether we keep him. Either way, I think it's good to see that he's doing well. And he's a likable.
I really like him, to be honest. I just think history proves with Michael Keane that good coaching always gets the best out of him. Whereas if he's just thrown in with the rest, doesn't seem to work.
Yeah, I think that's a good point for many a player. Whether it's an Everton player at all.
It's not just exclusive for Michael Keane. But
good coaching goes a long way at any team, really. And, you know, you look at the sides who do the best at the moment, so they're all the sides who are coached the best.
Mm. And the teams at the bottom just play what they want. So
yeah, so it is testament to coaching. And, you know, that's why we should be pleased to have Carlo Ancelotti in charge, because there's not many better than him.
Nope.
And just one thing to finish, because I forgot to touch on this during the match reaction yesterday, and I almost forgot to touch on it during this show as well. How awful was the referee?
Well, do you know what? Evan must have played well. I forgot to talk about the referee.
That's it. I was that happy that we'd actually won a game of football yesterday that I forgot to fume about the referee.
It was Stuart Atwell, wasn't it?
I don't even know. But
yeah, it was Stuart Atwell, because I remember. This is a very tenuous link, but I was playing on FIFA the other week and Stuart Atwell cost me the win. So I remember that. And so as soon as I saw him last night, I thought, here we go again, Stuart Atwell.
Oh, but honest to God, how poor was the refereeing in that game?
Every single 50-50 just went to them.
I swear to Jesus, like every time, well, yeah, you know, Walcott got pulled back, no yellow card, but Richarlison gets a booking for standing in front of the ball, and Calvert-Lewin.
George Bulls off, I think, was took a chunk off Luca Dean's knee.
That's right, yeah. Oh, he was a little cry arse in that game, George Baldock. But obviously Calvert-Lewin as well puts an arm on Ender Stevens and gets a yellow card for that.
Just nonsense.
Meanwhile, their players are knocking seven bells out of Richarlison.
I don't mind any of tackling, but there's what they did in terms of physicality yesterday. No issue with it, but the referee needs to pull up on it. He just didn't. Just kept left things.
Or be consistent, because, you know, there's no harm in it. It's a contact sport at the end of the day, but at least let us make the same contact they're making.
Yeah, I don't think I'd see a worse refereeing performance after Lee Mason's against Southampton, but, you know.
Yeah, Lee Mason's got a really bad track record in Everton games. He shouldn't be allowed to referee Everton games at this rate.
There's been so many really awful ones since lockdown, since we've come back. The derby, that was woefully refereed.
I think it's just the nature of Premier League referees. We've got one of the most appalling refereeing standards, and definitely in Europe. But that was a shocker yesterday. I'm surprised we even got a free kick to score the header for him.
Yeah, no. But I wonder what did he give that for? I can't remember now.
Something on Andre Gomez, I think. But I think it was the only free kick we got all game. But it was just appalling, the referee, and I couldn't believe like some of the stuff. It's like you're not allowed to like jump for a header anymore, I don't think.
Nope.
But it was definitely one of those. He was definitely trying to play the game on until Sheffield United scored there with the 4 added minutes. That turns into 6. And you know,
I know. Every other game the last couple of days have been 2 or 3 minutes, 6 minutes, or whatever was it, 4 minutes.
Four minutes, but then he added on about another minute and a half for that. But you know, it's just, you know, if Everton were getting beat, it would only be 2 minutes.
Yeah, it wouldn't even be stoppage time, you'd say. Nothing's happened.
They'd blow the whistle on 89 if it was Everton getting beat. But yeah, they'd have it anyway. I think, bar the referee, it was actually a good day's work all round from Everton. We actually got a 1-0 win, a gritty 1-0 win against a team who were notoriously gritty. So, you know, maybe a bit of a role reversal there. But nonetheless, I'm very pleased to say that we won a game of football for the first time in... Ooh, what's the date today? Just over almost 3 weeks now since we last won a game of football. So, and it feels even longer during this lockdown period. So, really good to see. We've got a win. And, you know, we've got one more game. Hopefully, we can get another one. I think Owen will be adamant that we should be getting one when you consider who it is we're playing.
At least a point.
At least a point. I think a defeat would be absolutely embarrassing there. And mean,
I wouldn't come back.
You can't discount anything given the way this season's gone with us at times, but I'd like to think we've one way or another we'll find a way to win that game. But yeah, let's be optimistic. We're coming off the back of a decent win. So let us know how you feel anyway, if you're feeling optimistic, or even if you're feeling pessimistic. I mean, it's Everton we're talking about here, so But for you podcast listeners, it's time for the middle bit where we basically waffle on about something completely different to Everton. And for once, we're not as completely depressed about Everton as normal. So, you know, we'll go for something really out there. And today, our middle bit, we're going to be asking each other, what is your favourite conspiracy theory? What's your funniest conspiracy theory?
I mean, I'll go with this. To be honest with you, I don't talk on Everton podcast. It's not something we normally go over, but so I'm going to sort of cheat a little bit and use an Everton conspiracy theory as my one. And just that basically, like we all know, that in 2005, when Kalina was the referee of the Everton game, I'm utterly convinced, and I'm not being bitter, I was convinced that he did a number on us there, because he didn't want 5 English teams. You know, I'm not being funny. We finished 4th and then Liverpool won the Champions League, which made it sort of an unprecedented time. But at the same time, Liverpool, I'm sure, drew someone like TNS or someone, and we get Villarreal. You know, the eventual semi-finalists of the competition, just only knocked out by Arsenal. And top it all off, we actually get ourselves this season, we're back in the game. And for some reason that Duncan Ferguson goal got disallowed because apparently yeah, Marcus Bent was fouling
someone. The draw was definitely off ball.
I think, well, that, it wasn't even that. It was almost as if like they give us a hot ball draw, and then to top it all off, they tell Kalina, who's like on the payroll, to go, just do good way, come out of the time and just do one last game and just make sure that Everton don't go through in this game. And they probably thought, Everton haven't got a chance yet. And then we get a goal 10 minutes from time that takes the game to extra time, and we were much the better side in that game. And lo and behold, I don't know how he disallows that goal, and then it all becomes very easy for them. Then, so there's my conspiracy theory.
I read into something that Kalina was forced to retire in 2005 because he signed a deal with Opel to be to be sponsored by them, and of course Opel was sponsoring AC Milan at the time, which forced him to retire from football. But apparently that's all right. That you can come out and retire
to get it, make sure it's one game. It was the easy option, wasn't it? Because, you know, it was Liverpool, 5 times winners of the competition, or, you know, the perceived little old Everton who were just lucky and happy to be there. So, you know, it was obviously we're going to take it out on Everton, to be honest with you. I can't believe we didn't push it further. I can't believe the club didn't complain more, to be honest.
I think if we had Mashiri then, or a billionaire with a lot of legal leverage, we'd have definitely gone to the CAS like City have done over this ban.
I think so. Yeah, because I thought it was scandalous.
Yeah, but dare to say, that's not a very funny conspiracy theory, Ben.
Well, I didn't really know what the flavour was going to be honest, so I'll let Teddy go next, and then because I wasn't going to start coming out with pure Towers World Trade Center conspiracy theories.
To be honest, mate, it was literally anything, to be honest, but just preferably something not quite as traumatic as that, because I've still never got over that one.
Yeah. Paul McCartney, then, not being a real Beatle.
That's a very good one, I love that.
It's not true at all, let's face it, but... You know, the way they've got the car, haven't they, saying is the year he would have been and all that. You know, my dad's a massive Beatles fan, so I've always heard that conspiracy theory where apparently Paul... But I don't know how the hell you replace Paul McCartney with someone who looks like him, sounds like him, sings and plays the guitar like him, you know, without any other Beatles knowing. So as much as that's like quite a good conspiracy, I can't think of any truth in that one. What have you got, Terry?
I mean, what are we asking for? Ones I believe or ones I...
Well, that's it, isn't it? Because Let's have one of each.
Well, I can't give you one I believe because I absolutely don't believe the vast majority of them. I think I'm not saying everything we're told is absolutely, you know, spot on. That's the way it went down. There's a difference, though, between a conspiracy theory and just acknowledging that corruption and things are real. You know, like government contracts going... being for open tender and stuff, and yeah, there's all kinds of that goes on, but I think the majority of conspiracy theories is just absolute, you know, bollocks. I've got to be honest, it's basically people who work backwards from their conclusions and they just basically use apophenia, which is human beings' ability to see patterns in things like that aren't there. So we, you know, the way it's similar to, you know, when you look at clouds and you think that looks like a shape. Yeah, it's like that. We'll do that with, you know,
you'll mold what you can see to make it fit. Making a jigsaw out of Play-Doh, innit? You can make the piece fit.
Exactly, and the things that don't support you, if you're working backwards from the conclusion, like I decided I think this, so the things that don't support it, you don't bother with.
It's become dead tribal now, hasn't it? Dead tribal, everyone, like, even if you've just made it up in your own head, if someone disagrees with it now, the scum of the earth.
Well, it's just... It's one of them. People conflate the idea of, you just believe everything's the way we're told and all... No, of course I don't. There's all kinds that goes on. But I think people give individuals, they give governments, they give all these groups far too much credit. Think about what they try and hide and it comes out. And it's really like the times that even bigger successfully. It's stupid. It's like that my favourite one now of like, you know, instead of give one that you believe and one that you just laugh at, it's the classic, it's Flat Earth. It's like, how many times does it need to be debunked? It was debunked 100 years ago. Never mind recently, but the thing with conspiracy theories is there's always, in the ones that, you know, are more feasible, there'll always be like a reason why they think it's lied about. So chemtrails and stuff like that, or you know, there'll always be like money, or they're doing it because of money, or they're doing it to do this, to control that, or hide
this. I think
this.
The moon landing was fake, though. There's one for you.
Bloody hell, it's an interesting one.
That is, we'll that's come, not real at we'll, all. That.
We'll come to that. What the... the flat earth one makes me laugh. It's like, why would they lie about nonsense. That? Like, what do they get? Like, no one makes... If the world is actually flat and they say it's round, it's like, what is the upside of that? What is the conspiracy there? It's such a banal... I think that started out as some people proving a point. If to say... We're entitled to be stupid and you can't tell us otherwise. And people like latched onto it, not realizing it wasn't serious. Like, there's a lot of things I don't believe, but aren't inherently stupid to believe. The flat earth one is consistently debunked, and I don't know why people like cling to it for dear life. Like, you know, dinosaurs aren't real and all that. Oh, I don't know.
Right, I think it's time to finish on a much more contemporary one, and one which might hammer close to home for us Scousers. The 5G causes coronavirus conspiracy theory.
Why would the government need coronavirus to put 5G out? Why wouldn't they just do it? You know, all these 4G masks they've already got, just use them.
What makes me laugh is the crossover of people who don't believe coronavirus is real, but also believe the fact it's, what is it? Is it real? And he's causing it, or is it not real? And the government's alliance, like, oh, that's so. I despair. I swear to God.
So I take it you haven't been going out then, Teddy, and setting fire to masts.
I just despair. I honestly despair. Like, I understand how people think a disease isn't real. I do know people who've had it. I know people who've died from it. But I also, I can sort of imagine why people would be 5G causes X, Y, Z, because things have happened in the past where certain things caused illnesses. I don't really know how a radio mast would cause a respiratory illness. I just don't get how they cross over. It was just like, I think 5G conspiracies existed before coronavirus did. So they just basically grabbed hold of a big sort of illness pandemic and bolted it onto something they already thought. Like, oh, yeah, see.
That's a bad thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's like...
But also, I think it's easy to put two and two together and get five, because obviously, well, literally five with the G, but... Oh, no. Thanks for the little drum roll there. But, of course, 5G was a Huawei thing, wasn't it? Which came from China, and obviously coronavirus originated in China, and then there's, like, obviously a Donald Trump's going China in the background. And I think that's it's just literally the more you get people like Trump in charge, you point fingers at China and just can't help themselves. I think you're always going to get the idiot who follow them who can maybe put those two and two together and get five as well.
Well, there's millions of people who voted for him in the first place, so, you know.
If there's anything that makes you lose faith in humanity.
That's when I lost faith in humanity that day. That and the Brexit vote. Two of the most unlikely political results I'd ever thought I'd say that.
No, Trump got in, Brexit happens, we hired Ronald Koeman and Steve Walsh. Can we just erase 2016 from history?
I've ever told you the thing I used to I don't know if I told you on recording or I've told you off air about a sort of thing that me and my mate used to do in my old job. We looked up once, it won't explain how we got onto it, but you know the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland?
Going around the world, black hole machine, yep.
Yeah, well, we looked up that there was an only one instance where that's been turned off since it was started. And it's when a weasel fell into it. At some point, so they had to switch it off to get the weasel out. Don't know the full story, but that was basically the gist of it. And I'm sure it was like 2015, 14, something like that.
It was 2015, right before all that crap started. Well,
me and my mate theorised that when that happened, the machine sent us into a new timeline, a weasel timeline. Now, every time anything strange happens, I just text him or he texts me. And
the weasel's gone. Is that weasel's fault?
So when there was, honestly, everything that's anything weird that has happened, you can just chalk it up to that. Basically, when things happen, like Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer want to challenge each other to push-up contests. You go weasel timeline. When there's a global pandemic and the Daily Press briefing has got a message, actually a question from the Lad Bible and Robbie Savage, you go weasel timeline. And I'm sure there's even weirder things than that. Like, I'm sure the next manager of Man United will be Theresa May, or it'll be Allardyce.
Well, Carlo Ancelotti, you mean Everton manager's weird enough.
I mean, that's another one. Ancelotti in charge at Goodison. And to be honest, dare to say, bloody Liverpool winning the Premier League, I didn't think that had ever happened at one point.
Well, yeah, exactly. Anything out of the ordinary where you think, 5 years ago, that would have been dead strange. And now, because everything's just gone mad, we just laugh at it. Like the president talks about...
To be fair, on the nose of Liverpool winning the league, there's something completely mad right there. We've got Liverpool building a stage in the stands to lift a trophy on when they've got a perfectly good pitch in the middle to where they could just lift it there.
Absolutely.
What is honestly the deal with all that? What's the point of spending £1 million?
It's all so that Liverpool can be Liverpool and get through. And they've got to tell the world. Not one person is not allowed to know about it. Did you see them driving screens to Stamford Bridge and all that?
Oh, yeah, but I'm not like, bothered. But fans do that, though. We'll always get fans.
Would Everton do that, do you think?
No, we drive
stuff to Arsenal. Why? You know, these are teams who've won like 10, 12, whatever Premier League titles. No,
I think you're being a bit generous to Chelsea there,
Well, no, I mean, combined, like, you've got sort of like, you know, United, Chelsea's, Arsenal between them. We've got how many times have they won
the majority
league,
of the Premiership titles since it's been the
Premier
League.
They're not going to be bothered, are they, really?
But, I think it's trying to stand out a bit. I mean, what was wrong with putting the platform that they always do in the middle of the pitch and letting them set the fireworks off?
Munich didn't do anything like that, did they? Just listed it on the pitch.
They just pour steins of beer over each other every year.
That's the way to do it.
That is how you celebrate the title win, though.
The thing is, though, all this behaviour from, like, the fans, like, and even the stupid, even weirder stuff, like taking, like, replica trophies, the Finch Farm, and, like, you know, the friggin' Flair and Dixie Dean's, and it's eating them alive that they've been looking forward to this for so many years, and now that it's arrived, no one's there, and they can't rub it in anyone's face. So they're desperate to go and... like upset everyone as much as they can because of the circumstances. One of my mates who's a big friend told me, he said, honestly, I'm made up, I've got it, but the coronavirus has ruined it a bit, because imagine how much better it would have been if it had just been normal. They were like one win away from it when the pandemic hit and the lockdown. If that in the non-weasel timeline, if this happens, they win it. You probably win it I mean, it'd be horrendous for us and everyone else, but can you imagine from their point of view? Imagine we won the title at Anfield and everything was like, you know, there was
imagine
no
imagine we won a game at Anfield.
Good point. Can we throw an elephant into the Hadron Collider?
I'm just going to start throwing stuff in it because I want everything to change at the moment, the way everything's going. Why don't we just try everything?
Can we start? We'll start with Boris Johnson, throw him in the Hadron Collider, see what happens there. Or will he just block it up?
Gylfi Sigurdsson,
yeah.
I mean, that'll probably be the most space he's found for a long time.
I'm just nailing these puns.
Come on, he's got a Balbi.
Put our central midfield in it, because it's a black hole machine, so beautiful. Oh, yeah. Black holes.
Nice.
Everton's central midfield. Big gaping hole.
If I carry on with him with all these puns, you'll have to build me a stage in the car.
Yeah, but spend £1 million on it, mate.
Fantastic. Right, anyway, we'll leave it at that. We're going to move on to our next segment, which is the match preview segment for our final Premier League game of the very, very extended season. Everton going to off the back of a first win in 5 games. A pretty impressive win, to be honest. I don't think any of us saw it coming, but we got the win. pretty pleased. And all of a sudden, we go into the final game against a very much struggling side with a bit more optimism. Ben, I'll start with you, mate. How do you feel going into this one?
A little bit more sort of enthusiastic on the back of that win against Sheffield United, like you say there, James. I didn't see that coming. You know, I thought we'd struggle in that game. I thought we'd struggle to break them down. I thought we'd struggle to keep them out, you know, because they were obviously fighting for Europe still as well at that time. But, you know, it's one of them. It is a bit of a dead rubber for us, but it does make it interesting that Bournemouth, I've got every kind of motivation to try and get the win because, you know, we are going to be directly involved in what is pretty much the only sort of excitement on the final day, which is the relegation zones. You know, Watford's defeat yesterday coupled with the victory for Aston Villa makes it really interesting, especially because we just love the Rubber Snake Brigade to go down. That'd be fantastic. You know, it's interesting that we're going to be involved in it. Personally, I don't care whether Bournemouth do or don't. I'm not part of this big Evertonian sort of Twitter group saying, oh, I hate them and all this. I don't really. I don't mind Eddie Howe. I think he's a decent manager. He's done a good job with what he's had.
Thank God that one's not on this show.
But it's not. I don't think Eddie Howe's ever claimed to be a top manager, though.
No, he hasn't. It's done it.
You know what? The problem is what everyone forgets about Eddie Howe. Whereas, like, I'm not in any way saying he's a future Everton manager in any way. He's not at that level. But he's took that team up from like minus 17 points in like League One or League Two. He should have a statue outside that ground for what he's done for the club.
No,
but
and I'm sure he will because he's probably one of the greatest figures in their history. And
I mean, Bournemouth, it is Bournemouth. You've got to remember, look where he's got them. The where he slipped up is not investing in the right players. You know, if the money they've spent on the like, all right, Ake wasn't a bad buy because it looks like they're going to get pretty much double the money off City for him. But, you know, you look at like the Jordan Ives, the Solankes, players like that, you know, they've wasted a lot. I mean, like, we've been guilty of wasting a lot of money. It's just we've had more of a foundation to sort of keep us afloat. You know, they've spent money badly like we have, but they've not had that two or three. They haven't got that Richarlison in their team to dig them out of a game. And that's the difference at the moment. The thing is with Bournemouth, you're expecting them to go well for leather against Everton and try and get the win because they do need the win to stay up. And it's all sort of culminating in what should be an exciting day. But I can see Watford being the team that drop through the trapdoor, to be honest with you. It's just, it'd be interesting to see how we approach the game with not much to play for. It looks as though Carlo tries to motivate them against Sheffield United, try to get them, you know, back to sort of some kind of performance after the dross we saw in the previous few games. So, you know, I'm going into it, no sympathy on Bournemouth, hoping that we go and get a comfortable win just so we can go into the summer with a bit more positivity, really.
Yeah, that's going to be crucial, to be honest. The final game of the season is crucial to sort of determining a bit of the mood, because I remember after we lost that 1-5-1 against Man City in 2004, that was one of the most depressing summers. And of course, Rooney left after that as well. It was horrible. Yeah. We don't want to end on an embarrassing note. And for me to lose a home game against a side who could still go down even if they do win is a depressing end to the season, if ever there was one.
Well, an interesting stat for you. Here's one for you. If Liverpool, by some eventuality, lose tonight against Chelsea, Everton have got the longest unbeaten run in the Premier League at home. In Europe, even. I think it's in Europe. Because that'd be 10 games unbeaten at home. I know. Only Liverpool have gone longer unbeaten at home.
And to think the last time we got beat at home was off Norwich.
Exactly. So there you go. So there's a little interest stuff here. So I'd like us to go there. And more than any, you know what? I wouldn't even mind if it ends like sort of 5-4, something stupid like that. I just want a good entertaining game. And I want to see some good attacking.
To be honest, it's Everton v Bournemouth. It always seems to be one of those games.
You know, well, you know what? We know we can defend and we know we're going to improve the defence. So I'd rather just see that we're going to be able to attack the next season. I'd like Richarlison to get 15 league goals as well. That'd be nice if he could get
a couple. Calvert-Lewin, both of them.
He needs a goal big time.
Yeah, I'd love him to get
fourth,
one.
Richarlison's on 15 all comps, as is Calvert-Lewin. But it would be nice for him to get one of them to get a couple to get 15 league goals.
Yeah, it'd be great to see. And I think that's going to be interesting. Obviously, you say Bournemouth need the win and probably need a comprehensive win as well. So
I think a win might do them. I think a win might do them because I think, isn't it, if Villa and Watford get beat, I think.
Yeah, but Villa would have to lose heavily as well.
All right, okay.
They've got better goal difference, I think.
I didn't realise it was that big a gap, to be honest with you. I thought it was only two goals.
Villa like minus that. 4, I think it is. Villa are minus 27 and Bournemouth minus 31, I think.
27, so 4-goal swing.
Yeah, so they could do with beating us by 2.
Oh,
and
oh, they'll beat us 3-0, don't worry.
Well,
Watford could get beat about 5-0 against Arsenal, couldn't he? If Arsenal go for it.
Yeah, but I think Bournemouth will go hell for leather with us because they Why need
not?
To.
Why not?
But yeah, that could play into our hands because we are Absolutely. Quite we have been quite solid defensively despite how or even when we've been awful, with the exception of the Wolves game where we did capitulate, we haven't lost by more than one goal, even in the games we haven't played. In fact, we've only lost twice. And they were against sides that, dare I say it, are better than us.
You forget that, don't you? You know, in the midst of all this crisis, you know, we have lost 2 games. I think Everton Twitter world's mad because you go from 2, all right, disappointing defeats to Wolves and Tottenham away. But you go from that and it is literally like the end of the world. Every single player's got to go. We've got to sack everyone and get rid of every single player. Beat Sheffield United 1-0 and play okay. And it's like, oh, no, I can see the positives there. We're looking good again. And it's just exhausting. You know,
that's Everton fan.
It's exhausting, though, isn't it? It's like, well, why do we always have to be red hot or ice cold? Why can't we just be, all right, we know the season's not going to go that far, so, you know, we're doing okay and then we'll improve. Why does it have to be, oh, we're going to win the league or we're going to sack everyone? It's madness.
It is. That is Everton in a nutshell.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I do think we weathered the storm better than I thought. You know, that with those 4 games, Tottenham, Southampton, Wolves and Villa, we were abysmal, let's be honest, in all of those games. We still managed to avoid defeat in 2 of them, and only 1 of them we lost heavily, considering what could have happened under a Marco Silva or a Martinez in a period like that.
Could have got ugly.
Yeah, could have got very ugly, and we weathered the storm relatively well, and I think that's the one thing. We do seem to be a lot more resilient at the back, and I think that's going to be crucial in a game like this where we're going to have a team who are going to be throwing everything at us.
I think it's going to be the best game of the day. I think it's going to be the most exciting game.
It's got to be, we've just got to make sure that we come out on the right side of it. At the end of the day. Because too many times we've been the sideshow in these kind of games where there's been thrillers and we've always seemed to be the losing team.
I'd love to see that. In a way, actually, I would like to see the back of Bournemouth because I hate going Bournemouth away. It's an awful situation.
Precisely. Well,
We haven't won it, apart from in the cup.
Exactly. I think that in itself is a good reason to get rid of them. For that reason, we should be trying to hammer the final nail into the coffin.
I'm with you there on that one now.
I think that's what we've got to do. I think it might be best to set up a bit more defensively, dare I say. And I mean, that's weird to say against the struggling side, but given the way
we'll get chances in that game, won't we?
We should be playing on the counter-attack in that game and be setting up to break like that. And if we do it right, which to be fair, I thought we did quite well against Sheffield United, where we set up that way, I thought. If we carry on like that, I think we've got a good chance of
getting the 3 points.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Teddy, how about you, mate? How do you feel about this one?
I'm feeling pretty relaxed. I mean, it's strange to be going into it. Obviously, it's one of the big games of the day, as you've said, but we're looking at, like, oh, we want to protect, like, little stats. Like, we'd like to get Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin on to set them up to goals. I'd quite like to see, if not Nels, Moyes Keane start and possibly get a goal so we can end a difficult season on a good note, maybe. Whereas they're obviously looking at Premier League survival. But the biggest thing for me is, if this was Marco Silvestre, it would be the most nailed-on defeat you'll ever know. Like, we'll get better than he needs it. Whereas Carlo's got, like, he's not lost at Goodison yet. And I don't think he's ever lost even the bottom three. I want both of those things protected. I don't want them to lose at home at Goodison. I don't want them to lose to a member of the bottom three. And frankly, of the bottom, well, the three sides in question, obviously not a Chigon, I think Bournemouth are the ones who are probably already feel like they're down because they've got, you know, with the goal difference, they've got a job, got such a big mountain to climb. It's not just they can't stay safe just by beating us. They've got to beat us by a certain amount of goals. They've got to wait for other results to go their way. I think, yeah, they will turn up. They will go for it.
We'll have a right go.
But I think they're finished. I think they know they're down. So one goal goes in against Bournemouth. I think that's it. They're finished. The game's up.
I think that's a very good point.
But I'm like yourselves. If you ask me who's going to want to go down, can all of them?
I don't mind Villa. I don't mind Villa. At least
I think Villa's the one at most like wouldn't mind staying up, and I think Villa will be the team who stay up.
But it's good to see Villa back. But you know, it's good to see Villa there. I think.
I'm not bothered either way. Villa,
yeah,
but
I mean,
I'd rather they stay.
They've all got their downsides, though. I don't know if you remember Villa when they were when it was us and Villa were like the. I mean, they had crack on top six. Now it was a top four when it was Everton and Villa.
And we finished above them every time, though, didn't we? Even though we both missed out, we always finished above them.
Yeah, but honestly, make this Villa. I'd be happy to see Villa go as well, because Villa would give them a year or two more in the Premier League to get established, and they'll be like Newcastle, Leeds will do it if they stay up. Or these clubs who think they're bigger than Everton because they've had 5 minutes where they haven't been relegated. So they would. I'd love to see them go down for that reason, for this phony rivalry that they probably try and create with us the second they're safe. Watford. See reason A, they did make a phony rivalry, plastic snakes and all that bollocks.
It doesn't bother me if it's a rivalry between two like big clubs, though. I've got no problem with us making Leeds, Newcastle, Aston Villa a rival. What's pathetic for me is when it's like Watford are trying to make themselves rivals. Like Watford are, even in my opinion, in the same league as Everton, whereas at least those sorts of Villa and Newcastle, it can be a bit of a rivalry, a bit of a feisty game, because you know that there's good fans behind there. I mean, Watford, I mean, that's a waste of space. Elton John aside.
If you look at, like, the people always talk about the historical league tables, and like Leeds and Villa and that would always be in that top 20. I think Watford would probably be in League One equivalent in that sort of all-time table.
They've never won a major trophy, have they?
Yeah, but even league averages, I think they've been third tier at times and stuff like that. It's, I think Bournemouth would be in the fourth tier.
Yeah, I mean, Bournemouth, there's a couple of things at Bournemouth. Like, they seem to have the Indian sign over us, don't they? They always seem to get, like, you know, results against us. At their ground especially, mate, not so much.
That one earlier this season was awful. That was one of the worst moments of the season for me. Could have gone second if we'd have won or something. It was like...
We all know how that works. But and let's be honest, like, as a club themselves, above the, you know, the picture in their tunnel above the walking onto the pitch is Margaret Thatcher, and they all touch it as they go up. So they're a proper little.
I don't get why everyone says all that, but it's politics. That's football. I care about football.
I think
everyone just think that they are like proper cry arses though, the team. They are the little weasels, the players. I don't like some of their players.
I wish our players would be like that. Instead of passive.
I mean, when you think about the Premier League, the league is pretty good, and the media all love buying into it. But the league's pretty good for providing like narratives and stories. And what I think the narrative of the day, Villa and West Ham will pass without incident. I think this game will pass without much incident, but I think Watford Arsenal, after that Cajones comment about that Troy Deeney made about Arsenal a few years ago, how much would some of those Arsenal players love to send Watford down?
I completely forgot about that, and that'll be a very interesting little narrative you've just brought up there.
Yeah.
It had some excitement to the final day, and I'd like to see Everton sign off with a win. Obviously, if you're being picky, I'd like to see us sign off with certain players, get goals, you know, set us up nicely going into the pre-season and next season. It's going to come really quick, but as the league in general, I think that the story of the day will be Arsenal-Watford, because, I mean, that when you watch a match of the day that night, I think that'll be the one. And it's just a shame there's no fans in the stadium, because I don't know if you remember previous days when it's gone to the last day and several clubs can go down.
Oh, the limbs and the pitch invasions and
the radios on like that and all.
Yeah, everyone's got a big massive wireless radio up to their ear.
Match of the day have done things as well where they've shown the three games at the same time and just flip between one.
They'll probably still do that.
They'll just be empty stadiums.
I don't think they'll do that without the excitement of the fans. There won't be as much spectacle. I think they'll just cover the game, the relegation battle, one after the other. And then the final one, it'll be the one who stayed up. Or vice versa.
I just think it'll be like they'll just shake the camera a little bit to pretend there's some kind of limbs.
They have crowd noise, don't they? Like, you know, do you have a fake crowd noise?
Yeah, honestly, it's this weekend is going to make me miss the crowd noise. The crowds, sorry, not the noise. The crowds more than anything. Because
happens? Whoever stays up, do they start like throwing cardboard cutouts of people onto the pitch?
So, no, what they do is they pay £1 million and build a stand. That's what they do. They pay £1 million and build a stand to celebrate the relegation, or just not for themselves because they can't wait till the fans are back, just to rub it in the faces of every other team. That's all. That reason alone.
Oh, finish 17th. Suck on that one, everyone.
Yeah. We're building a stand. That's like the analogy I made before. Like sending a screen to Chelsea ground for winning the Premier League title. It's like putting one outside Everton's ground going, oh, we stayed up. Well, yeah, Everton stayed up every bloody season. Chelsea have won about 5 Premier Leagues. You know what I mean?
Interesting. But one final little thing before we finish up. I can't recall the last time that Everton actually had a part to play on the final day in a relegation battle. Thankfully, we've not been involved in one for a while. But I think the last time we actually had a part to play in one was 1999, and Southampton beat us on the final day to stay up, I think. And there was a pitch invasion at the Dell.
I can't say I remember that one, to be fair. I'm trying to...
I only remember that one.
Right, literally off the top of my head, I'm sure we've sent teams down. I'm sure we've sent teams down that I've been there for, because I wasn't going to match in 99. I didn't go till 2003. But I've seen someone go down.
West Brom went down, but when Dunk played his last game, but they'd already gone, I think.
Oh, they'd already. All right, okay.
Who else have we had? I can't even remember who we've had on some of the final days. Thinking about.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We probably played relegated teams, haven't we, on the final day at times?
But we're going to send Bournemouth down.
This is definitely the first time since 99, I think, where we've had a team go into a game against us with like relegation on the line. I can't remember anything like that. I only know the Southampton one at the Dell in 99 because of the Premier League years on Sky, and they played like Fatboy Slimmers. They showed that one, so and obviously like this was like Kevin Campbell and his pomp, and that we just beat West Ham 6-0 the week before, so you know,
makes sense.
Yeah, this is how much of a geek you become when you know you're on furlough and you sit at home and watch all the Premier League years back to that. Yeah, there you go. It's interesting though, because it's strange, you know, 21 years have passed since we've like sent a team down.
Been in a game that mattered.
That's a good point, actually, yeah. That's painful.
Since we've been in a final day game that mattered to anyone. The only one I can remember is when we stopped Newcastle getting in the Champions League when Jelovic scored. That's the only one I can remember, when Pardew was there. Pardew got his 8-year contract. We're miles ahead of Everton. Beat him 3-0, I think.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of which, this right now will be the very end of Alan Pardew's 8-year contract that he signed at Newcastle in 2012.
And it's probably bad to say that they probably wouldn't have done much worse or better if he'd have been there or not, really. He's not really done anything, have they? They've been down since, though. To be fair, they've got relegated since.
They did get relegated, but I think he got relegated and not come back, I think, if he was there.
But is he? Oh, yeah, I suppose. Not really any worse than Steve Bruce, like, but...
Bruce has done a good job there, I think.
He's done a good job, but he's not a good manager. He's an average manager, isn't he?
He's a pragmatic manager, like a Moyes or an Allardyce, isn't he?
That's the bracket Moyes is in now for me, definitely. Mark Hughes, that kind of just boring dinosaurs of management.
Grey-haired, they've all got grey-haired.
Roy Hodgson.
Yeah, grey-haired. Don't hire a manager with grey-haired unless he's got a raised eyebrow and he's Italian.
I was exactly, yeah, apart from Carlo, because he looks fantastic, doesn't he? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like Italians with grey hair are just well better looking, aren't they?
Yeah, to be fair, you're right there.
But yeah, I think the looking at the end of the season now, it's like this is the first time I can think of a game where there's been something riding on it that we've played in.
But not for us, innit?
Well, it's never been for us apart from 2003 when we like lost the UEFA Cup.
Oh Jesus, yeah. It feels like we're just limping towards the end of the season. Like Terry said there, the most positive thing that we can think of it is if, like, a Moise Keane or an Anthony Gordon managed to get on the score sheet, or Branthwaite putting another good performance. And that's a real damnation of our season. But, you know, we've just got to limp into the end. And I just hope it's a good game to finish the season on.
Yeah. I just hope we win. Believe it or not, that's actually
what I hope we finish 11th, because I wouldn't like Carlo to be the lowest finish for 15 years.
Yeah, that's...
For 2003-04 was the only time since that we've never finished lower than 11th, so I don't want Carlo to be guilty of that, breaking that record.
No, I'm quite confident he won't, to be honest. I do think we'll win, which brings us on to predictions, Ben. Prediction for the game.
Oh, the way we play against Bournemouth, normally we'll go 4-3 Everton.
Terry?
Why not?
2-0 Everton.
I'm going to go 3-1 Everton. I think we're going to score 3 for the first time since lockdown.
God.
There's a damn indignation if ever there was one. But yeah, I think we nailed it before, I think. Bournemouth need to win comprehensively, and
they're going to come at us and we're going to hit them.
And the thing is, I think obviously there'll be scores elsewhere as well that they've got to keep an eye on. Watford and Villa, if they even get a point, they're gone. I think for Bournemouth, if they're not beating us comfortably, which I don't think they will, if they're not in front at like half time, I think their heads might drop.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of Villa or Watford might get a goal. Particularly Villa, I think.
I think Villa might beat West Ham away. I can see Villa going there and winning.
I think if they can beat Arsenal, I think they've got a chance against, you know, a West Ham side, especially if they are. I think, are they still beating Man United, by the way?
It's 1-1.
1-1?
It's 1-1. Greenwood scored.
God, he's a good player, that 20 Greenwood.
20 minutes
left. Yeah, it's bad to think Greenwood scored 15 goals in the under-18s, and Ellis Sims has got 38.
Isn't that in the under-18s? Yeah, but I know I'd rather have. He's obviously not ready, is he, Ellison? Let's face it, but it was nice to see him on the bench the other day. I'd like to see him come on, but...
Yeah, that was... Not
being funny, we've got Moise Keane can't even get a look in, so I don't think he is.
It's bad that we were also moralised by the idea of a kid who we've never seen play for the first team getting named on the bench. That's just like...
Got the Fellaini afro, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, you know...
That's a key element, you know what I mean?
Afro's always going down well with Everton players and other teams.
Unless you're David Luiz.
Yo, let's just sign anyone with an afro, we'll be fine. we'll leave it at that anyway. Everyone seems a bit more confident going into this game because we thankfully won a game last time. And, you know, we look ahead to the final game of the season with optimism. Not only that we might win the game, but also it's the final game of the season and the season's finally over because, you know, we're glad to see the back of it. I think we all will.
Absolutely.
But for podcast listeners, of course, we're going to finish with the classic quiz. We're back on the classic quiz. And for this one, it will be Terry battling it out against Ben. Basically, it's back to the old school quiz where I name an Everton fixture from the past and our two competitors reel off those players in the squad. If it's a starter or a used substitute, you get the right answer.
Do I need to have a pen and paper?
I don't want to because I'm
sitting on the end of my bed, well, so I don't really.
No, usually we just wing it, to be honest.
Oh, that's fine. Sure. Winging is perfect.
Yeah, that's how we roll on the show. And of course, the first person to get an answer that isn't a starter or a used sub surrenders as W to the opposition. So we're going to decide who goes first. I've actually come prepared. Look at this, a coin. A real one-pence piece. So I'll let Ben pick this week. Heads or tails, Ben?
Heads.
And it's tails.
Of course it is.
So, Terry, it's your show. Do you want to go first or second, mate?
I'll go first, please.
You will go first, will you? And here we go. Ready for the quiz. We're all sort of ready to cue the intense quiz music. There it is. I'm going to reveal the fixture in question. And on the day where we've been discussing the Bournemouth game and notorious high-scoring Everton games at Goodison Park, fittingly, we're going to go back to Saturday, the 5th of February 2011. Everton 5, Blackpool 3. Teddy, you're up first, mate. Who played in that game?
Louis Saha.
Wouldn't be that player who scored 4 in that game. He definitely didn't play. Of course he played. Louis Saha is the first name ticked off the list. Ben?
Jermaine Beckford.
Jermaine Beckford got the other goal. So we've got all the goal scorers already. Done and dusted.
Is this just Everton players you want, by the way, or Blackpool
just,
as well?
Just the Everton players. If there's 14 to choose from who played either from the start or off the bench. Right. If it's a draw at the end, we make your name, some Blackpool players, but hopefully it won't come to that. So yeah, we've got 2 down, 12 to go. Terry, you're up again.
Sylvain Distan.
Sylvain Distan did indeed play. Ben?
Tim Howard.
Yeah, Tim Howard's one of the bankers, really. And yeah, he played the full game, of course. 4 out of 4 so far. 10 more to go. Terry?
Leighton Baines.
Yep, Leighton Baines did play.
Phil Jagielka.
Phil Jagielka was the final substitute.
Phil got away with that one.
Close shave, but still a right answer. 6 out of 6. Terry?
John Heitinger.
Johnny Heitinger was the other starting centre half.
Seamus Coleman.
Seamus
right
Coleman did start indeed. 8 out of 8. Got 6 more to go.
Leon Osman.
Terry, you've surrendered. Ben is the winner. Leon Osman was an unused substitute.
Yeah. Didn't happen very often back then. He played no matter what, most weeks.
Yeah, he did. I'm surprised at that one myself, to be honest.
But I tell you something that does happen very often on this show is Terry loses the quiz.
Oh, yeah.
anyway.
Good at quizzes as Leon Osman was at football.
Oh, so you know what, Leon Osman walk into that Everton side now, mate.
What consistently average.
Walk into that Everton team now, at least he
That doesn't mean he's good. That doesn't mean he's good.
Yeah, it doesn't mean he's good.
Yeah, there we go. Anyway, what we normally do, we usually finish off the team anyway, so you still had 6 to go. Ben, your go anyway.
Phil Neville.
Phil Neville, of course, the captain.
Stephen Pienaar.
Stephen Pienaar has already gone.
He's a Tottenham money.
He's had on his little sabbatical at Spurs, yeah.
Marouane Fellaini.
Has he not come back yet?
He hasn't come back yet. He's only just left, I think.
Yeah, he just left that January.
This was in the really dark abyss era. This was horrible. I was a season ticket holder this season. It was horrible. But
Fellaini was my next one.
Fellaini did indeed play the full game. You've got how many more to go? Who have we missed? We've got 1, 2, 3, 4.
Tim Cahill.
Yeah, Tim Cahill was the third used substitute. He was the you've already named all 3 of the subs. So it's just 3 starters remaining.
Jack Rodwell.
Jack Rodwell was one of the players who started and he was subbed off for Beckford.
Tony Ibbett.
Nope, Tony Ibbett was an unused sub.
Dinyar Biletinov.
Yes, Biletinov started and was replaced by Tim Cahill on the 70th minute mark. One more player.
Not sure.
I'm trying to think here.
Kevin Morales.
No, I'm sorry.
Wasn't there then, was
he? No, that's right. Yeah, he hadn't signed yet.
So who have we got so far in the starting 11? We've got Howard.
Neville. Howard, Neville, Distan, Heitinger, Baines, Coleman, Biletinov, Fellaini, Rodwell, and Saha. And then Beckford, Cahill, and Jags off the bench. Arteta. It was Arteta. I'm surprised it took us that long to get him. But yeah, there you go. There's the full team. And the substitutes were, of course, the used ones, Cahill, Beckford, and Jagielka. And the unused subs were Jan Mucha, Tony Hibbert, Leon Osman, and Victor Anachibi. Out of interest, just one little bit of trivia. There was 2 former Everton players in the Blackpool team that day. Can you name any of them?
Oh, Give me a sec.
Absolutely not.
I think Blackpool players, former Everton.
Yeah, two of them.
Did they start the game?
One started, one was a sub.
What position?
One of them was a centre mid, but I think he was only really from our academy. He only played about once or twice for us.
It wasn't Lundstrom, was it? He didn't play.
Nah.
Hold on.
That's a really tough one. I might give you that one. It was Keith Sutton.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know if he's ever got that.
I know it now you've said it, but I would never
But you'll probably remember the one who started the game, and I think he set up one of the goals in this game. And he was a notoriously underwhelming player for Everton.
Wasn't James Beattie, was it?
It was James Beattie.
James Beattie?
Yeah. He somehow outpaced one of our players and squared it for Jason Punch, if I remember rightly. Well, it has to have been, surely.
Charlie Elton scored in that game as well. They were 3-2 up or something, I think.
Yeah, they were 3-2 up, and then we sent Beckford on, put two up top. One of Moyes' rare 4-4-2 outings. Yeah, we actually ended up winning the game. Hey ho, who knew that 4-4-2 works? but there we go. Quiz is over. Ben Crawford is the winner of the quiz. Not like Teddy to lose a quiz. But as we usually do, we finish with a song and the winner of the quiz gets to pick that song. So Ben, have you got a song that you'd like to play to finish us off at the end of this podcast?
Okay, on the spot, I'll just pick my favourite song. Lost Weekend by Lloyd Cole and the Commotions.
Interesting. Lloyd Cole and the Commotions, Lost Weekend.
Yep.
So we'll leave you with that as we finish up at the end of this podcast. Thank you for tuning in on the Toffee Blues, and we'll see you next time. You too.